You're listening to Let's Talk Macro,
brought to you by Bandhan Mutual Fund.
Hello and welcome to Let's Talk Macro, the podcast on macroeconomics by Bandhan Mutual Fund, where we discuss interesting global and domestic macroeconomic topics and events. We're officially here with the final roundup for 2025, which is just crazy to say. I'm Ahalya, and I've got with me Srijit Balasubramanian, economist in the Fixed Income Fund Management team, as always, to help us with today's deep dive. Hi, Srijit. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Thanks, Ahalya. I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, still in a little bit of disbelief that 2025 is almost over. And you know, for global and domestic markets, 2025 has been an extremely eventful year. I'm really glad we've had Let's Talk Macro as a platform to unpack all of it. You know, so whether it's on the economic front of growth, inflation, labor markets, and consumer demand, or policy responses on the fiscal and monetary front, we've seen significant narratives, questions, and challenges on all of these different aspects. So as we draw the curtains on the year, we're yet again posed with the question of what lies ahead. So in today's episode, we're going to discuss the main economic narratives and trajectories that took shape in 2025, both globally and in India. And of course, what we think lies ahead in 2026, think being the operative word. So Srijit, let's start with the US, shall we? Taking a step back, could you recap like the major economic themes that played out and what you think will matter ahead?
Yes, if you take a step back, like you said, so the US had one of the longest expansionary cycles in its history in terms of growth and labor markets, which ended with the pandemic. And thereafter, it experienced the pandemic era surge in inflation due to both supply and demand. And the Fed started hiking interest rates with a lag, but aggressively, and took it to 5.25+. I know we know that part. And again, from September 2024, that is last year, Fed has cut rates now by a total of 175 basis points. And it believes it is now sort of close to where the neutral rate could be. But inflation is still above 2%, the 2% target. Labor market weakness, particularly in terms of weaker payroll additions, and that has become more apparent, shifting the balance of risk in the near term. And therefore, the impact of fiscal policies on higher tariffs and tighter immigration are playing out on one side, while growth has been strongly driven by AI-related investments. And you know, even better than expected, consumer spending has contributed to growth to a certain extent. But therefore, overall financial conditions also remain quite accommodative, as equity and credit markets are also quite buoyant. Therefore, where we stand today is at a point where there is considerable uncertainty on the economic front for the US. You know, therefore, like I said, on one side, growth could find further support from continued AI investment in adoption, relatively healthy US consumers, at least in aggregate, and even fiscal impulse, you know, from next year because of the recently passed legislations. But again, on the other hand, we have the recent labor market weakness, which can move sort of non-linearly. So by that, I mean, it can moderate faster and heavier, while, you know, the inflation range, if you see the data now, is still sort of plateauing above 2%. And that is, again, due to the tariff-related one-time price impact on goods, and even to some extent, some sticky core services prices. So there is this uncertainty about the direction or path the economy takes from here, with relevant impact on, you know, interest rates and the US dollar, of course. And that matters for us. After being unilaterally strong in 2023 and 2024, the dollar weakened in the first half of this year. You know, and we've talked about this. But then it has strengthened sort of again since September, and more recently again it has sort of weakened a little bit. So it's not a one-way street anymore, right? So, and if you look at the Fed's, you know, latest median projections, you know, for rate trajectory, it's for just one rate cut next year. Although its dot plot suggests a more divided committee, and even markets are currently pricing a full 25 basis points cut only by mid of next year, sort of reflecting this uncertainty that is there. But these things, again, can change very quickly.
Yes, like we've learned this past year. So
Absolutely.
almost there with the rate cuts for now, but some real uncertainty on where the economy heads from here in terms of growth, inflation, and the labor market. So let's move to some of the major economies in the rest of the world. Why don't we start with China? Again, a big topic of conversation on our series this past year. How have things changed through 2025? And how do you think 2026 is going to play out? What are the key points there that you think will matter the most?
So we know well that China faces structural issues like high corporate debt, off-balance sheet government leverage, demographic issues like aging population and a shrinking workforce, and also excess industrial capacity in several sectors. And that's well understood. In the last few years, it has also been facing cyclical issues like the slowdown in the property sector and even domestic consumer demand. Higher U.S. Tariffs, obviously, is sort of over and above this. Although export growth has remained robust, if you see again the data, if you see the trade surplus from January to November this year, that has crossed around $1 trillion. But now Mexico has also imposed higher tariffs on China because its bilateral trade deficit has sort of widened very sharply after the pandemic. So growth continues to face multiple issues. But again, government policies also continue to be incremental and not big bang. We've spoken about this before. So it again feels like the authorities want to rebalance growth and don't want to go the big stimulus way again. The outcome of the recent China Central Economic Work Conference, the CEWC, sort of also reflects this. They also want to move industrial output towards higher value-add areas like rare earth, AI, and so on. Well, there has been this recent anti-involution drive, which is to cut the excess supply across various industries. But we have to see how much they can deliver on this front because over-leveraged companies really have no choice but to export it, sort of export it out in the face of weak domestic demand in China. So we have to see, what the main growth driver is. And currently, it is exports. The important aspect to note here is that given CPI inflation continues to be very benign, the real effective exchange rate, the RER, has depreciated, giving a meaningful advantage for Chinese exports. So the overall story, therefore, is weaker domestic growth backdrop, but trade doing well, which means not a major impetus for global growth from China per se, but other countries could find more Chinese goods hitting their shores.
Again, an interesting story to watch unfold in 2026. So let's move on to the euro area and Japan. What is the growth inflation story there?
So, euro area has been facing structural low productivity, innovation, some barriers to movement of labor and capital. Even an industrial economy like Germany, which I think almost has a 25% share in the euro area GDP, has been struggling with competition, right? Particularly from China. And we know this over the last few years. And even in traditional sectors like chemicals, autos, and even they've been behind the sort of consumer shift to electric vehicles. These remain sort of background issues which need to be addressed, and only then growth can have new drivers. But on the better side of things, the impact of US tariffs has been milder than expected. There is also a planned increase in infrastructure and defense spending, but we have to see how that goes ahead. And at the same time, we also have fiscal issues, even in some of the major countries like France, right? So that's one area we have to see how it plays out. The exchange rate is an important part of the euro area story typically. So the appreciation in the euro earlier this year when the US dollar weakened had raised concerns about weaker exports and lower inflation and so on. This has obviously changed for now, but that remains one area that needs to be watched. So for the euro area in 2026, I think I would just look at the growth and inflation drivers in a very classic sense and the exchange rate. Coming to your question on Japan, Japan is a completely different story here. It's coming out of decades of deflation. Inflation and real wage growth are sort of now rising. The question the central bank has been asking is whether there is a virtuous cycle in play between these two factors and that it's not just one-time increase. But if you see the recent surveys, they continue to suggest robust business sentiment and wage growth expectations. Even the recent commentary from the Bank of Japan suggests a rate hike this week, and the market again currently expects about two more hikes next year. But the interesting part has been the JPY currency, which has been weakening despite this. One reason is obviously the US dollar has been strengthening. but it is sort of also due to the fiscal policy in Japan, which has become looser. And we know there's been a recent stimulus package that has been announced and that's sort of getting approved under parliament. So a big question facing global markets from all this is whether the JPY currency will meaningfully strengthen, you know, eventually throwing what you call a spanner in the wheels of the global carry trade. So if that happens, you know, it can be a challenge against USD strength. Similarly, a quick word on some of the other important countries like, you know, Singapore, Canada, Australia, and so on. And they are in the early stages of a potential rate and interest rate reversal towards hikes. I mean, this probably matters in the context of the US dollar, but admittedly, it's again very early days. But emerging markets in general have dealt with the growth risk from US tariffs better than expected, like we just spoke about the euro area also. Monetary policy in these EMs is probably, you know, unlikely to ease much further in general. But fiscal policy has some room on the margin and, you know, that can also be used to help in more targeted support for demand.
Okay, so a bit of classic growth, inflation, exchange rate setup, I guess, for the euro area. And for Japan, which stands out from the others, the year is likely to end with an interest rate hike by the Bank of Japan and quite possibly more next year. That brings us to the most important question. What's happening at home for India? Tell us about the economic narrative playing out. And what do you think 2026 holds for us, Srijit?
So, again, we know nominal growth has witnessed some cyclical moderation, although real growth, you know, we've seen that in the GDP data has been buoyant. There is obviously a statistical angle to it, as well as deflators have also been low, given, you know, WPI and CPI inflation have been low. The southwest monsoon season ended this year with an 8% surplus rainfall, and that also sort of augurs well for the rural economy. Inflation, therefore, you know, particularly recently, has been very benign. Right, driven by particularly low food inflation and even mild core inflation, if one excludes, you know, motor fuel and precious metals from the typical core definition. Monetary policy has been very proactive, with RBI cutting rates and infusing liquidity through OMO purchases and FX swaps right from the beginning of the year. Although the stance change in the June policy did burn some market expectations, it can say it was restored in the October policy. And it has cut rates again this month. It's kept guidance on further action open-ended, announced measures to, you know, add liquidity through OMO purchases and FX swaps. And it has again reiterated its focus on regulation also to facilitate the flow of funds to the economy. Now, that's on the monetary policy side. And if you can look at the fiscal policy, I mean, even fiscal policy has been in action this year with the income tax cuts, GST rate rationalization, and so on. But obviously, the impact of that has also been that the central government's tax revenue growth till October, from April to October, if you see, has been weaker. But the market is not worried about any fiscal slippage this year because, you know, of higher RBI dividends that we've seen, potentially, you know, lower total spending as we end the year and so on. But it is the INR exchange rate and the external account that has really been getting all the attention recently. So if you see the early part of this year, the rupee didn't really benefit from a weaker dollar, unlike other emerging market currencies, because the RBI rebuilt our FX reserves post the Q4 2024 selling. And more recently, like I said, nominal growth is moderated and we've been hit by 50% US tariffs, which is a big thing, and which is higher than most peers. Therefore, our core imports have also been rising, if you see the data, you know, particularly from China and some categories. So capital outflows have risen and the INR, as we know, has depreciated to 90 plus versus the US dollar. Although some weakness, you know, one could argue is a natural macroeconomic buffer.
I just want to pick up on that point there, Srijit. Why do you say that? You know, how does a weaker exchange rate help in the current context?
Yeah, so a weaker currency technically aids exports, particularly as India's exports now face higher US tariffs, right? It also disincentivizes imports and thus lowers the trade deficit. So this is important again in general and also in context of higher imports from China right now, as we said, or rather rising. So our low foreign currency debt and even the low current inflation sort of helps in this context because there are no issues there. And importantly, this natural currency adjustment allows monetary policy to focus on, you know, domestic growth and inflation without being too overly worried about the, you know, external account and the rupee. Because whenever the RBI sells US dollars to support the rupee, you know, say for example, it may have to sterilize the liquidity it thus drains through, you know, other domestic transactions. So this could also be the reason the RBI has not been, you know, constantly and aggressively intervening to defend the rupee. But the fact sort of remains that we need to see more stable capital inflows like FDI in the long run. Although cyclically, it's been looking a little better in the recent months. But if you take a 5 to 10 year horizon, we see that net FDI inflows need to improve.
Okay, got it. Thank you for that little breakdown. And given the growth moderation, rupee depreciation, and all the policy interventions that we've seen, what lies ahead for our economy now, Shejit?
Okay, so let's start with inflation. Mm-hmm. This is likely to stay moderate next year, like most forecasts are now, despite, you know, some base effect waning and food inflation likely to rise from the unusually low levels that we see now. And that's because core inflation is likely to stay moderate. And we also have the new CPI series anyways, which will be published from February next year. But the inflation story is two-sided, because one main reason for our benign core inflation is, like we just discussed, is higher core goods import from China. And that can sort of continue until China's weak domestic demand improves, right? As policy support also remains modest there. Now, this can widen our trade deficit, and the direction and pace of widening bears watching. You know, particularly as consumption growth picks up, we have to see if import intensity of consumption is rising. It can thus impact our growth in private capital expenditure cycle, which has been, you know, already a bit moderate, although it helps lower core inflation. So there are two angles to it. But all this alongside the US dollar will matter for the INR and the nature of RBI's FX intervention, therefore. And again, on RBI's interest rate policy, irrespective of whether it cuts one more time or not, it could hold the rates low for longer. I think that really matters. And we also expect the RBI to infuse further liquidity through at least $1 trillion of OMO purchases to offset the drain from the seasonal pickup in currency in circulation and even potential US dollar sales if it has to, you know, intervene in the market. With the impact of policy measures already done, so normal GDP growth should hopefully improve from here. The new debt to GDP framework and the FY27 fiscal consolidation budgeted in February, for the next year, that will also be important from a fiscal angle. So the fiscal deficit is consolidated over the last few years, and we've seen a good amount of consolidation. And the incremental direction and pace from here, we'll also have to keep in mind the growth angle. So that will be important. Needless to say, a tariff deal will also be crucial for stabilization of the external account. Although we could still now technically end this financial year with another negative balance of payments. But let's not in general forget that capital flows depend on growth differentials between countries, right? And not just interest rate differentials. So yeah, as a year draws to a close, let's hope for continued moderate inflation, pickup in nominal growth, stabilization of the external account, and the right fiscal and monetary policy support.
Yeah, a great wish indeed as we end an exciting year of economic data, events, policies, and challenges across the world. With that, it's time for me to summarize the key takeaways from today's rundown. So pay attention, everyone. So first up, the US is at a point where there is considerable uncertainty on the economic path ahead. Growth could continue due to AI and fiscal impulse, but recent labor market weakness can also snowball faster, and inflation has been plateauing above 2%. The Fed has cut rates by a total of 175 basis points in this cycle and believes it is now closer to neutral. Second up, China. China continues to face structural and cyclical growth challenges, but its reliance on exports to channel its leveraged industrial overcapacity means other countries face higher Chinese imports. For the euro area, domestic drivers of growth and inflation and the exchange rate in context of the US dollar will matter. And Japan, on the other hand, is looking for a virtuous cycle between wage growth and inflation. It is widely expected to hike rates this week and again next year. If JPY finally strengthens, it could possibly be a challenge against the US dollar strength. And finally, in India, nominal GDP growth moderated, inflation has been recently benign, monetary policy has been proactive with rate cuts and liquidity infusion, and fiscal policy has also been supporting demand through income tax and GST rate cuts. However, 50% US tariffs, rising core imports and US dollar strength lead to a weaker rupee, which can also be seen as a macroeconomic buffer. While nominal growth recovers from policy measures, inflation is likely to stay moderate, but this is also on the back of higher imports from China. So the direction and pace of change of our trade account bears watching, although there is nothing alarming there. Monetary policy is expected to stay supportive with low rates for long and further liquidity infusion, while the central government's fiscal consolidation under the new debt to GDP framework should also keep growth in mind. That's it for today and this year, in fact. I'm really hoping that our discussions have been useful and will continue to be so in the new year. Thank you so much, Srijit, for joining us and wishing you a very happy new year.
Yeah, Ahilya, I wish all our listeners also a very happy holiday season and new year.
Absolutely. So we'll be back in 2026 with another episode of Let's Talk Macro. Until then, buckle up for what lies ahead next year and anything you need unpacked macroeconomically speaking, we've got your back. Bye-bye. Happy new year.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.